Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
The following is a presentation of the Four Center podcast feed.
From the center of the galaxy, this is Force Center, a show about Star Wars, pop culture, and the ultimate adventure, life itself. This particular episode is Cues of the Everything. We take Star Wars questions and anything else you got. I'm Joseph Scrimshaw.
I'm Ken Napslack.
And I'm Jennifer Lando.
And I'm going to talk about Audible now, because that's what we do at this part of the show. Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download and 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/forcecenter. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. Probably your Apple Vision Pro or whatever else you have strapped over your eyes. I don't know. I haven't looked into that. Exactly. It's possible. Anyway, we are continuing to recommend Dark Disciple by Christy Golden. This has long been a favorite around here on Force Center. Just a great and very different Star Wars story, focusing on Asajj Ventress and Quinlan Vos. There's a renewed excitement about this novel, about this story, because of Asajj Ventress's upcoming appearance in season 3 of Bad Batch. So if you're going to check it out anyway, it helps us tremendously to do it through this link. You can download your free audiobook today by going to audibletrial.com/forcecenter. One more time, that's audibletrial.com/forcecenter for your free audiobook. We also have some announcements. We made these on our main show this week, but we also wanted to share them here because we're really excited about them and want to make sure everybody knows about them. Jennifer, do you want to talk a little bit about your new YouTube show, Jedi Beat?
Yes, so I am producing a Jedi Beat. I'm bringing them back from the vault. I've remastered it in the sense that I've actually re-recorded most of my audio, and I'm putting visuals to it, and we're going to put it on YouTube. They're kind of like Star Wars mini documentary style things about behind the scenes things like the Mos Eisley Cantina, and that is coming when? February 19th, Monday. Yes.
Yes. Monday, February 19th, and continuing every Monday for a total of 5 weeks. What I also love about the Jedi Beat show is that it is such a selection of things that you gravitate toward in Star Wars and that you love Jennifer. So I think not only is it great journalism, but it is great, the beating heart of Jennifer Landa as well.
Come into my mind.
On YouTube. Speaking of coming into our minds, we also want to announce 007 Center. This is something that I have wanted to do forever. We've talked about, just in the course of talking about Star Wars, Ken and I will bring up a mutual love of the Daniel Craig James Bond film. So we are going to discuss them. We're going to start with 2006 Casino Royale, a film that was released the day I married my wife. So extra level of importance to that release date to me. We'll talk about that on the episode, I'm sure. So we're going to release this in a special way. It is going to be available to all patrons at any level. So if you're a member of our Patreon, you get access to our Casino Royale discussion. But we want to also make it a little bit more accessible. Patreon has introduced a shop feature where you can do a one-time purchase. So if you don't want to do the subscription model, if it doesn't work for you to be a patron, but you really like James Bond, you really want to hear this conversation, there's going to be a video version for a $5 one-time purchase and an audio version for a $3 one-time purchase. And this Casino Royale discussion is going to be available February 12th.
That's right. Cannot wait for this. This is going to be a lot of fun. And plus, they get to watch the Bond films again. Great.
Yep.
Great.
Yep. Yep. I'm so excited to sit down doing. I'm doing work now. While watching James Bond. And Ken, we also have a little bit of a thing called Databank Brawl Rewind. You want to tell people about that?
That's right. Our Databank Brawl series remains one of our more discussed series. It started in 2016. It was the brainchild of Joseph there saying, hey, this is something I'd love to do. Because back in the day, Force Center began with the main show, and then we all kind of did some of our own things. Jedi Beat was one of those things. I had Spotlight Star Wars, a ramble on a Saturday morning, and Joseph brought in Databank Brawl. It was such a lot of fun to do, and we still have old school Force Center fans who talk about it. We did wrap up the series early 2020, and we want to represent it. We have a lot of new listeners from that time on, and the easiest way for us to do that, instead of just going, hey, scroll back about, I think it's 114 pages on Acast to go to the beginning of the series. And maybe it's, you could just do a search bar on Apple, but I don't know, sometimes it doesn't work, you know? We're going to make it easy. It is on our feed. We dropped the first episode on Sunday, this past Sunday. Every Sunday, we're just going to drop the episodes in order, working our way up. There's like 170 episodes or something like that. So take the journey again. Laugh at the old jokes that made sense then, but maybe don't make sense now, not in terms of a problematic way, but just like, oh, that they ended up doing a Boba Fett show. like that kind of stuff. And learn about Chopper with a cape, all those things. Laugh with us. It is on our feed every Sunday.
People have been responding really positively, and that is great. I love it. Well, so those are all of our announcements. So we're going to get into the actual thing we do on the show, the questions, and hopefully the answering. This first question comes to us from a patron on Patreon, David. David says, here's a Star Wars question. Did Ahsoka choose Sabine as an apprentice because she was scared if her Padawan went wrong, she would have to fight and stop her, and she sought someone weaker in their connection to the Force? Also, it rhymes in inverse with her master being the strongest Force user ever. Balance in the Force. So we definitely want to take this question, David, about how did Ahsoka relate to Sabine's strength? But I think it's also an opportunity for us to talk about a part of the story that we don't know yet, of why Ahsoka might have chosen or accepted Sabine as her apprentice. So, Ken, where would you like to start? Are you gravitating to discussing the strength level question, or do you want to go into the bigger picture?
Yeah, I mean, this, Dave, number one, thanks for the question. Thanks for Star Wars question. This has been a thought starter for me. I spent a lot of time over breakfast this morning of our recording session trying to actually figure out what I think about this. And look, I'll just say this, and I don't mean this to be snarky towards the question, but if this were the answer, if Ahsoka was like, I'm picking that one because she's weaker than me, that's a bad boss and mentor and friend. I think we've all worked with those people. I got some people in my life who they love you as long as they know that they can keep you a level or two below them, right? Like, and they'll build you up just so far. And even when they build you up, they'll build you up to be like, hey, you were, that thing you did was good, but it wasn't good enough, and I know how to make it better. I've been dealing with some folks like that over the course of my career here in LA. Who hasn't? And it could be any career. So I wouldn't want that to be the answer for Soka, just from that point of view. So I'll start there, and I have some other thoughts, but I want to kick it over to Jen and you there.
Yeah, well, I want to get Jen's thoughts, but I want to interject quickly. Often, as often happens, a Star Wars question will lead me to think about my time working at Kinko's in the IDS Center in Minneapolis, where there was some higher-end equipment. There was a DocuTech, this thing that had it was harder to run, and it took time to learn how to make copies on it. And when I first came, everybody was kind of being the way you were describing Ahsoka, of like, I don't actually want to pass on what I've learned. I don't want anybody else to know how to run this machine, because then they will become too powerful. And it was a little bit of like a hold each other down. Yeah. My manager was very intense, and we've discovered that he was a Star Wars fan. And I made the joke that if you could run the DocuTech, you had become a Jedi. You had completed your Jedi trials. And he got this light in his eye. He's like, everyone in this store is going to become a Jedi. No more this holding back the knowledge. I want everyone to know how to run the DocuTech. And it's just, it is really interesting to think about that idea of why would someone have the motivation to hold someone else they're teaching down? Jennifer, what are your thoughts on the strength level?
Yeah, I don't understand it, because it comes from a place of insecurity almost, which does not, it's not consistent with the character. I had wondered this question often, obviously on the show a lot. I've been like, who chose who? Was it Ahsoka or was it Sabine, right? Presented this way, I'm like, oh, I don't think it was Ahsoka that chose Sabine. I think it was maybe Sabine wanting to connect with Ezra, and you know, and she approached Ahsoka. That makes more sense to me now. Something I had not thought of before this question. But yeah, it just doesn't make sense to me that she would want to choose someone weaker. It comes from such a negative, like I said, it's insecure. Sith-like. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So I really agree with that. And I think to me, what's interesting about the question in the seat of it is Ahsoka is, she isn't insecure. She isn't unsure of her power, but she is so consumed by the worst case scenario.
But then that's fear.
It
so
is.
Then she's ruled by her fear. That doesn't make any sense for me with the character that we know.
Here's what I'm saying is, I think she is giving into her fear too much. And I think that is her arc in the Mandalorian era of she isn't realizing that she's giving into fear. She thinks she is being cautious and judicious. And I think, to answer directly David's question, I don't think she's like, I'll only train somebody who I can put down if they're a problem. But I think she was hyper focused on the possibility of anyone with the Force being a problem. In that final episode of Ahsoka, Hu Yang tells Ezra that Ahsoka was concerned what Sabine would do if she unlocked her full potential. That there was the tragedy on Mandalore, and Ahsoka partially cut off their training because she was afraid that Sabine wanted this extra level of power, because what was in her heart was not justice, but vengeance, was the way I took that. So I think for me, there's this perspective of, yes, Ahsoka was preoccupied with the what if somebody goes wrong, but she was not thinking about power levels. In fact, it's almost the opposite from based on what Hu Yang told Ezra of, I'm afraid that if I unlocked her power, which might be significant, she would do dangerous things with it. And I think it dovetails to me with what she tells Anakin in her vision. When they're having the conversation in the Clone Wars battlefield, when she's kind of intimating that what she's upset about is he fell to the dark side, and he's got that great line of like, is that what this is about? And like, I'm more than that. And she says, yeah, I'm paraphrasing, but she's like, yeah, you're more, more powerful and more dangerous than anyone thought. And I think that she's seen everyone who touches the Force through that filter of, I didn't realize how dangerous my master could be because of his choices. I'm afraid that Grogu will be dangerous based on his attachment. I'm afraid Sabine will be dangerous based on her loss. So I don't think she was worried about power level, but I think she was giving into the fear that anybody who touched the Force could become Vader.
Yeah, I think there's, with the character Sabine, and this might be a little bit of David's question, is like, you know, there's some things on the resume where you go, oh, what happened there? Could you talk to me about that year you worked at the Imperial Academy? And there's a lot of that in Sabine, and so maybe that translates into this kind of thought of like, maybe I can control her in some way. But yeah, I especially with the Grogu thing, especially going back to the episode with Din and Grogu and just where Ahsoka was mentally during that episode, I follow that fear path in that, at least in that regard.
Yeah, and I think she triumphs over it. I mean, I think that to me is the power of the Ahsoka series, is that, you know, she awakens from that vision with Anakin going, I am just focusing on the negative. It's all about stopping Thrawn, and and there's no focus on, well, what's the value in saving Ezra? And maybe I can focus on that too. Jennifer, what are your thoughts on that?
I think it's, for me, I saw it as more about fear of connection, fear of getting close to people. She's lived this kind of lone wolf, solitary life. And so I feel like, in some sense, she feels, I don't want to say, betrayed, disappointed by what happened with Anakin, obviously. And I just think that she doesn't want to get close to Sabine. She doesn't want to risk Sabine disappointing her or her putting too much pressure on Sabine. I feel like that, for me, allows me to hook into it easier. It's more about her wrestling with her inner turmoil, which I would have loved to have seen a scene with that. Just, I don't know, her in a room, really wrestling with it in this way. I mean, we got other moments, but I don't know. I think it would have made it a little bit more clear for me.
No, I really agree with you that that's there. I think she's got to me, I think what I'm going on about is her relationship to the idea of Force and Force users and having just total caution around Force users. But I entirely agree with your read on what her like one-on-one relationship with Sabine is there's that level of friendship and attachment, and seeing that they basically have that they used to fly around on this ship together when they were trained before and had bunk beds, and Sabine had the lower bunk and and doodled, and they kind of had like a, you know, this big sister, little sister, you know, did Sabine ever get, you know, like used to happen with my sibling on the bunk beds, whoever's on the lower bunk bed gets to kick the upper bunk bed, and not violently, but just a little nudge of like, you still awake. Like, There's I really agree with you. There's a lot of that intimacy and fear of connection in their one-on-one relationship.
Yeah, I'm with Joseph on agreeing with you, Jen, on that. I think it's there. It's absolutely there. And you even got some of those comments. And I think it was Filoni, you know, going in of like, that's part of Ahsoka's struggle is reconnecting. And we've talked about it here about the real world connection of a post lockdown pandemic world that changed our habits and changed our connections and changed who we hang out with or talk to or what we do and how even just going, all right, it's time enough, I guess, to get back. And how do I even do that? I think there was a lot of that present in the Ahsoka character. And we break it down to bunk beds, I think it's even more powerful. So I think it's definitely there.
This is a story about bunk beds.
Yeah.
So I think we're, you know, mostly saying the same thing about the actual sort of strength level question of that. Doesn't seem like Ahsoka to say, I'm going to find someone weak in the Force so I can contain them. But we all have talked about really wanting the story of how did their relationship start? Why did Ahsoka choose Sabine, or why did Ahsoka agree to train Sabine being asked? This, I think we've mostly talked about it in the context of wanting to know that story myself, maybe also just being frustrated that would have let me into their relationship even more. But this question challenged me to go like, okay, put the what wasn't there away. And this is a chance to have headcanon of if Sabine came to Ahsoka, or even if Ahsoka decided, yes, I want a Padawan and I'm shopping for one. Initially, why did Ahsoka say yes? Why did Ahsoka start down this road with, one would assume, some level of optimism or hope for possibility in Sabine? Because she could have just said, I don't train people. That's not the path I'm on. Find somebody else. Why did Ahsoka say yes to Sabine or seek out Sabine, Ken?
I want to hear your headcanon, Jen, here in a minute about Sabine asking Ahsoka. I'm really fascinated with that. And then and Joseph, you saying, hey, you know, Ezra's out there and she want to connect with that. And Jen, you were saying that too. Like, I like that idea. I think there's something to me about my headcanon has a little bit to do with Ahsoka knowing the importance of, and place of Jedi in the world, but knowing how it all ended, being very present for what went wrong. And we always talk about Ahsoka representing, hey, what does it mean to be a Jedi? And that Ahsoka gets to ask that question of herself and now of a student and seeing things in, you know, and Ezra's off the board. Maybe she would have picked up the mantle, you know, that Kanan left behind with Ezra. And he's a prospect. He's a top prospect. He's a rated rookie, as they said in the old baseball card days. But then here comes Sabine, who's out of a left field. Not the way, as Hu Yang would tell her, that this ain't what we would do. and that kind of making sense to Ahsoka. And maybe that's why I want to hear what you think, Jed, of maybe Sabine's like, hey, I got a thought. And Ahsoka's like, wait, I got a thought. And they come together on this kind of decision.
I like that. I like that. Because what I wrestle with is how it was presented in the show and kind of the performances mm-hmm. that we got. So mm-hmm. it makes sense to me that Sabine would approach Ahsoka. That makes sense to me. But then the performance that we got, we don't ever see that yearning, that kind of hunger from Sabine that I would like to have seen if she did initiate that, right? Mm-hmm. She's right. driven, even if it's, you know, obviously to connect with Ezra. We're going to see that drive in her performance. And I don't feel like we got that, which made me then think, I think Ahsoka approached Sabine and was like, hey, kid, you got some raw talent. Let's use it. And I think the reason why she would choose Sabine is because Sabine has no knowledge really of like how the Jedi work and what they're supposed to do. She's not going to come like from a, like a, you know, if you're a jazz musician, you may not want to have a classical musician to train because they're going to be very rigid in their ways. Mm-hmm. You're going to pick somebody who's musical, right? Somebody who has a good ear, who's going to be more open to your teachings of jazz music, force jazz, as we should call it. That to me makes sense based on the performance that we got in the show.
I like a lot of stuff about this, and if I'm following you correctly, the idea that the Jedi are jazz and the Mandalorians are classical music, or is it the other way around?
Nope. Her form of being a Jedi is the jazz.
Yeah.
The Jedi Order is the classically trained.
Well, that makes a lot of that one. I can't. I have to agree with wholeheartedly for sure. That's amazing. I think I that's a really great point about parsing what happened the first time around based on what we felt emotionally seeing them try again. Mm-hmm. And I think because they tried again, I feel like I felt a little bit of the yearning. Like I said, when Sabine is watching that video of Ezra, that isn't just about missing Ezra. It's about him telling her what it means to be a Jedi. And I know you can complete my path. And I sense a little bit of yearning toward that. But then the narrative is also, Sabine has this yearning, but she also has this fear or wounding from having been rejected the first time. So we like, get those scenes where Hu Yang has to really convince her of like, what you're asking is, does Ahsoka want you back? But what you should be asking is, do you want this? Because you gave up as much as Ahsoka fired you, is what Hu Yang kind of puts it. But to your point, Jen, that means that Sabine in that moment kind of had, in those first episodes, had to present both the yearning to be it and also sort of like the disappointment of having failed the first time.
Exactly. So
there's a lot. It's a lot to play.
It's a lot to play.
Short, minimal scenes. Which continues to just get me excited for the day that we get to see the actual scene. But I feel like I tend to feel like Sabine or Hera came in and said, you want this. You want to follow Ezra's path. You felt that connection to the Darksaber. You feel something. Ahsoka's alone. She's directionless too. Go be go have bunk beds. You need one another. You know, one of you is a student, one of you is a master, and you need each other. That makes some sense to me. But at the end of the day, if Sabine came to her or if Ahsoka was looking, there's still that question of why Ahsoka chose her. And for me, I think it's you know, as much as I do think Ahsoka was wrestling with some fear, some focusing on the negativity, I have to think for her to accept Sabine, there has to have been that moment of the Ahsoka we've always known, who focuses on compassion and, you know, long odds. You know, her master taught her in the Clone Wars, be creative, take long odds, go for it. And I have to think that Ahsoka, it was a victory for Ahsoka to say yes, because she had to have so much caution in her mind and concern that what if this goes wrong? She gives it a shot and then gives into this concern that it's not going to work out. But yeah, it's got to start from a place of compassion and hope. What do you think, Ken?
Yeah, no, I think, again, going to the idea of I'm not just suggesting that Ahsoka's like being stubborn, like, oh, I'm going to rebuild the Jedi Order, but watch the way I do it. It's going to be different. I just think she's exploring what needs to be different, exploring, again, what it really means to go around this galaxy. And she sees all of that in Sabine. And, you know, if you're just looking for the back of the baseball card stats, she's had a darksaber and learned some of the stuff. Like, she already exhibited some things there just in terms of skills, and we can work on that. Like, you want to shoot a basketball? I'll teach you how to shoot a basketball. But I just think you belong on this court, and I want to explore that. And I think the fear and all the stuff that Ahsoka's got going on is there. And then, yeah, that's what, to Jen's point, of like, who asked? I can't wait to find out. If it was a mutual pointing, if it was Hera sitting them both down and going, I got an idea. Mm-hmm. It also is about the connection. And I think Ahsoka seeing that was probably important for both of them, and Sabine wanting that, whether or not she was, I think Ezra has a lot to do with that, and the search for Ezra and getting Ezra home and all those kind of big goals. And that maybe it was, the more I think about it, the more I think about what the series presents, I'm fascinated by what brought them to this decision to move forward. Cause it was completely outside the box. And you got to imagine Sabine's like, how many times she probably said, I can't do this. I don't have it. And she has to unlearn that. And Ahsoka's got to be like, no, I'm trying to prove that the heart of the Jedi is more important than, the magic hands, you know, like this is good. And then I quit, you're fired type of fallout.
Yeah.
It's such a crucial piece of information to withhold from the audience that I have to wonder why. Why did they not tell us? In any one of those scenes where they're both frustrated, one of them could have said, well, you know, I chose you because blah, blah, blah. Or, you know, I asked you to train me and you left me. Like, I don't know. Like, it's just the fact that nobody said anything. I'm like, what is your master plan? Reveal to me. Like, I just, I can't take it. I'm really hoping that we get that answer in season two.
Because
it's a big, big question that shapes their whole direction for both characters. Mm-hmm.
We had Hera present, you know, too. So, I mean, they both could have had the attitude of like, it was never meant to be. Hera played matchmaker and we both tried. Her heart was in the right place, you know. And for me, regardless of anything, I think, you know, this story will come eventually. I don't think Filoni generally doesn't sit on those kind of things. I'm hoping for Tales of the Jedi or, you know, Ahsoka season two to have some more clarity. I'm hoping to get that story because it is one that I think is, it's really interesting, really valuable. And, you know, boy, do we know this, living with Star Wars for years and years and years. Sometimes you have to wait a long time for the answer. But when you get it, it makes an older piece of storytelling sing much more for you.
Absolutely.
And, you know, I hope for that for myself, as much as I love everything. I love so much about Ahsoka, but having that answer would, I think, add a lot of nuance.
Mm-hmm.
And I do, this is my final thought. I like how much Hu Yang on the surface talks about classical music, Jen.
Yes, right. Yes, he does.
But he is open to jazz.
Yes. And
I think he'll, I like how much he's like, I'm going to give it to Sabine straight. You're the worst student I've seen. The back of your rookie card has the lowest stats I've ever seen. But also, don't you believe in yourself? Don't you want to do this? And... hey, so can Sabine. You always work better together, you know, and kind of rooting for them, you know?
Yeah.
A lot of great stuff there from Yang. Any final thoughts on this question before we take a break?
I mean, like I said, Dave, this is a great thought starter because this is some of the stuff I've maybe even had a bit of a challenge with in the series. But mm-hmm. some of the challenges, there's just like Jen, you said, information is currently withheld, and mm-hmm. we will find out, I hope. And so it's inspired me to think a little deeper about the conversations yet to be shared.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Any final thoughts from you, Jen?
I'm just glad that David, that you're thinking about this question as well, because I sometimes feel like I'm the only one. Why? Who trained who? Oh,
no, you are not alone, Jen. You are not alone. I have often wondered this as well. And I think what I really like about this question, what I really appreciate, is it made me really think about, no matter who started it, what had to be in Ahsoka's heart, that this had to be a moment of hope and compassion for her. And I'm excited to be able to see that someday. Mm-hmm. And with that, we are going to take a quick break, and we will be back with another question back in a moment.
Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, "What the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?" So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes. Nice
dress. It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
And we are back here on Cues of the Everything. We had a great question about Ahsoka and Sabine, and we're going to move on to the next logical thing from Ahsoka and Sabine to our first records. This comes to us from Anthony King. We encourage patrons, when they put in the questions, to share a little bit of their own story. So sometimes the questions are questions and also a little bit of sharing. So this one is a little bit of sharing. So sit back and enjoy. Here's what Anthony says. Hello there, Force Center. I have really been enjoying the music discussions as of late on the podcast. I was curious if you wouldn't mind taking the listeners on a journey back to the beginning. What was the first album that you purchased with your own money? Also, what type of music format was it on? Vinyl, CD, cassette, maybe even 8-track? In addition, how was the process of buying that record? Did you ask your parents for permission first, or perhaps you may have had to hide it from them? I would love to hear these stories. For me, the first album I bought was Green Day's American Idiot in 2004. At that point, I was only exposed to music that my mom listened to, which mainly consisted of Boyz II Men, Stevie Wonder, and Brian McKnight. I know the words to all of their songs against my will. The only time that I listened to other musical artists outside of what my mom had in the car was when I played video games, particularly Madden 05. The song American Idiot was one of the featured songs on the game's soundtrack, and at the time, I liked the punk rock attitude in the music. Upon a trip to Best Buy that year, I noticed the album cover in the store's CD section. After about an hour of pondering and trying to muster up the courage, I asked my mom if I could buy that CD. I was so nervous that she would say no, since it was so different stylistically than the R&B that typically permeated our household speakers, but much to my surprise, she said yes. That was one of the first times that I felt I could express my own individualism, which was an awesome and exhilarating feeling. Thereafter, I spent about a year listening to that record nonstop. However, the album does represent the changing of musical taste for myself. Upon discovering heavy metal greats like Black Sabbath, The Scorpions, and Judas Priest, I realized I didn't like Green Day anymore. At one point, I even took the CD and threw it against my bedroom wall from across the room, splitting the disc in half.
Take that, Green Day.
I am not quite sure why I did that. I must have been trying to be a cool rocker or something. Anyways, although I still do not like Green Day, I'm still thankful to that band and their music for being a part of that treasured milestone in my life. Enough about me, though. I look forward to hearing your stories. May the force be with you. Well, Anthony, none of our stories are going to be as good as that. No, Green Day saved me, and then I smashed their CD against the wall.
Nope.
Yeah, wow. Pretty amazing. Pretty amazing. Mm-hmm. But Jennifer, do you want to kick us off with your musical journey of what you bought, and was it an obstacle? Did you get support?
I was trying to remember what that was, and I remember going to Sam Goody, and I had my money, and I bought New Edition's Heartbreak album, and it had this song called Crucial on it that I loved as a kid. And the reason why I loved it was in that movie License to Drive with Corey Haim and Corey Feldman. And I was obsessed with that movie. And so somehow I figured out, I think I actually looked at the end credits of the movie and was like, that song, I want it. And back in the day, the only way you could get it, unless it was like a single, right? But that was pretty rare with cassette tapes. I had to go buy the album and I loved it. And that was the start of me going to Sam Goody. That's the difference of our generation. You're going to Best Buy buying CDs. I'm going to Sam Goody buying cassette tapes.
Were you at an age where you had like allowance or you were working a job and it was just your choice, or did you have to get it past anyone?
My mom didn't believe in allowances. I got nothing. I don't even know how I got that money. I didn't really, who
stole
knows?
Stole it from her purse.
You go. The five-finger discount from Sam Goody.
No. Yeah, before like making, you know, I would record the music from the radio on my cassette tape. So I did that a lot to get songs that I liked because my parents wouldn't give me money. Although I did get Debbie Gibson's Electric Youth the following year. That was another one. Yeah.
And do you remember what physically happened to that cassette? Do you still have it?
I had it. Oh God. You know, I went through this thing about a year ago where I went to my mom's house. She had all my old cassettes, everything, all my old vinyls, my Green Day vinyl. And for whatever reason, I purged it all. I gave it all away. And now I'm like, why did I do that? Oh, I'm so mad. Yeah. Okay. I can't wait, like my old Fleetwood Mac, my old Janis Joplin vinyls. What was I thinking? You guys, it's terrible. If you can rent a storage space, don't do what I did.
Yeah, I have much too large of a storage space. Yeah, yeah. Well, I'm glad that you didn't throw your cassette up against the wall.
No, I'm a hoarder.
Yeah, you're not alone. Ken, what is your journey?
First of all, this is just everything about this is fantastic. And Anthony, mm-hmm. I hope when you threw that CD against the wall that you had the time of your life doing it. This has just been a journey. Also, I was looking at the notes and I looked up, Jen, at what point did you turn into a Jedi with your robe going to Ilum? I look up.
That's it.
Jen's got a different vibe going. I did.
We were getting cozy because this was a great story told by Anthony, and I got cozy with my blanket. I'm also fighting a cold.
You're fighting a cold.
I'm settling in by the fire.
Yeah, love it.
I wish we had an actual fire pit that we could, like, every time we have a really long question, it's like, all right, let's get out the marshmallows. Let's get the flames going.
And I apologize. There's a lot. First of all, am I the world's biggest Boyz II Men and Brian McKnight fan? No. I love Stevie Wonder. So, Anthony, lay off Stevie Wonder. All right. You've got the Scorpions listed. All right. Come on. I'll take Wonder over the Scorpions. We want to debate music. Sabbath and Priest are great. I thought I had this answer, and I think it's still the correct answer, but you know how time works and mm-hmm. you forget. I think my first self-purchase was Sgt. Pepper's on CD back when, remember those cases,
big,
like the giant, like, cardboard boxes of CDs that you had to get.
Yes.
The reason is I was a little bit of a late bloomer, music fan, shocking, but my parents didn't encourage me to even though my dad was his Navy ship's tape trader. He'd go to the shore, get the albums, record them, bootleg them on reel to reel, and then sell the reels or tapes to the ship. He was like the peddler of rock music from the late 60s on his Navy ship. I was in my now late grandfather and grandmother's house, and I found all the reels one day. And it was pretty my dad has pretty memorable, perfect penmanship, too. And I was like, Dad, these are – and he's like, oh, my God, those are the ones from the ship. Hadn't seen those in like 40 years. So despite that, I was, the devil is in rock music. So I certainly was encouraged, to get music, but, it snuck through. So a lot of my early memories are actually like Roy Orbison's greatest hits, Harry Chapin's greatest hits, the Beatles, rarities, which included the German versions and You Know My Name, Look at the Number, which kind of scared me initially as a Beatle. I didn't become a Beatles fan right away. Cause I was like, what is Schlepdeek? I don't know what's going on. But I didn't buy any of those. And so when it wasn't until high school. And then I was a kid who recorded things off the radio. So most of my music was just me pressing record when the local radio station said, hey, here's Mysterious Ways by U2. So it wasn't until like mid-high school, like 92 range, I was buying stuff on my own. Sgt. Pepper, Magical Mystery Tour. But then I had them on CD. But then because of that 1981 Ford Fairmont, Joseph, that you had and I had to get cassettes. So then I immediately was like nuts to these CDs.
Yeah.
I don't have a CD player in my car. So I remember about the White Album, Big Beatles Nut, obviously, and more during that time. So it was all that I got. Those were my first purchases. But I do remember going to a record store that's no longer there on Grand Avenue in Rio Grande, California, as it turns into Grover Beach, for those who keep score at home and live in my hometown area. And there was a Jake's Take and Bake Pizza and a record store, and I came out with Sgt. Pepper.
And what age are we talking about?
That's like 15, 16.
Wow. Yeah, 15, 16. And did you have to scrape up the money?
By then I was working, but I was like you, Jen. I did have an allowance, but it was like 50 cents for far too long. So I couldn't afford comics. It's like I had to choose between one comic a month or two comics a month. And so, yeah, it wasn't until a little bit later when I was working as a dishwasher at a convalescent home that I had discretionary income.
And now with your dad being the tape trader and them having the best of Beatles, were they like, this newfangled rock has Satan in it? Black Sabbath has Satan in it. But the Beatles, I mean, the Beatles actually do have backwards messages.
None of them satanic.
The Beatles were okay with them?
To be clear, up till about 64. And then it was like, they got really weird, which was coded.
Yeah. Not very big fans of Revolution Number 9?
No, not they ended up becoming very weird, and we just don't like that stuff from the later days. Now, my dad did. He told me later on that Long and Windy Road was his favorite Beatles song, and he used to sit in his bunk on the Navy ship listening to it crying. Like, But they things changed, and my parents were part of the Jesus movement of the early 70s, which was this whole thing in which a lot of the hippies found God, or a lot of people from the 60s found God in the 70s, and kind of early celeb pastors like Chuck Smith, who, Jen, you're very much aware of, and I was dedicated as a baby by Chuck Smith. So they emerged from that Jesus movement, and that was get rid of anything secular. And so I grew up with that.
Oh, yeah.
So it was
even
like,
Mickey Mouse disco records. My mom got rid of them. She was like, this is Satan.
Yeah. Did it say Goofy is Dead backwards on those Mickey records?
No,
yeah, it was Goofy is Dead.
Mickey and Minnie on the cover with like the Saturday Night Fever poses.
Yes.
Oh,
yes.
God.
Yeah.
Which is so funny. It's so funny when you finally, as I did, watch the movie Saturday Night Fever, like, well, damn. Okay.
Yeah, and there's inconsistencies because my mom is a giant Travolta fan. You know, I don't know if she followed his career much after Look Who's Talking, but you know, like Saturday Night Fever, Staying Alive. Like one of my first crushes is Finola Hughes because my mom just had Staying Alive on the TV on VHS the whole time, and you know, there's some popular music that was played. So I grew up. Yeah, my first concert was Debbie Boone. You Light Up My Life. That's my first concert. Amy Grant was played in our house until she chased the devil and left the Christian music scene and went secular. So all that. I think I've even told the story, but it's like my friends were getting into the Beastie Boys. And I did come home and say, I'd like to get a Beastie Boys cassette. Because I would like to have a license to ill. And my mom was like, okay. And then she came back with, she pulled me downstairs. I remember. And we had these big purple chairs. She pulled me downstairs to explain. Actually, not explain, to accuse. She says, do you know, I'm reading an article here, that at these concerts, the kids seeing the Beastie Boys sniff glue. Are you aware of this? As if I was like hiding it from my mom.
Oh my gosh.
And I was like, I didn't, Josh just like, he likes the Beastie Boys. I didn't, what's sniffing glue? Like, I don't know. What are you talking about?
It's so funny that your actual interaction with your mom was the video for Fight Right to Party.
Exactly.
Yes. Ken's mom, you're just jealous. It's the Beastie Boys. It's so great.
So, all that to say, that's why Sgt. Pepper came a little bit later in my life.
There's so many great memories. As I mentioned, my parents were extremely young when they had me, and I always knew that. But the older I get, the more I'm shocked by it, and the more I think about, like, how did that all affect my life? They were 18 when they got married, 19 when they had my brother, and 22 when they had me. Both came from complicated homes. They literally came from the other side of the tracks from one another financially, but also literally physically from the other side of the tracks from one another. My dad was a drummer. He started when he was like 14 or 15 and had a little jazz band, but then he got into playing in the clubs up north in the Brainerd area, in Minnesota, playing Beatles. My mom grew up with the Beatles, and the Beatles were amazing. I remember when we went to Target to get this newfangled compact disc of Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band, and my mom explained to me that it came out on the 20th anniversary of the album. And my mom explained it to me, and the first lyric is, "It was 20 years ago today," and me just thinking, 20 years. What an impossible length of time.
Right.
So they were young and supportive of music, which did shift over time as more of the sort of the 80s panic, the Tipper Gorification of parenting. My mom gave us, when we were pretty young, these buttons that said question authority because she saw herself as the underdog. And then when we got to be teens and she realized, oh, parents are the authority, she made us give them back.
Turn in your badges. McGarnacle.
I didn't realize that meant me. So no. So there was this arc to it where eventually I got to a place where, like, I did have to hide my Guns N' Roses album. I did buy a cassette single of Metallica's One, right. And I had to physically hide the cassette of One. Beastie Boys would not have been wanted in the home. But my first album would have been when I was really young, and it was a dual purchase with my brother. I remember picking it, but I don't remember how it happened. We might have had an allowance or like some birthday money, but my brother probably was just like, we need to experience what it is to buy an album. And my parents were probably like, okay. But I remember us like sitting down and going, this is a really hard decision. We really have to think about it. This is a big deal. This is our first record. And we had really liked the song that got a ton of play on the radio of Stray Cat Strut by the Stray Cats.
Mm-hmm.
So we decided jointly to buy Built for Speed by Stray Cats. And I remember listening to it and liking it, but the kind of classic thing of like, I like their single the best. I was in like second grade and was like, not sure about the deep cuts, Stray
Cats.
Like
the album cuts, yeah.
I like Stray Cat Strut. So I don't know how much we even listened to it, but now, yeah. but I still have it. I listened to it. I listened to that actual physical vinyl album a week ago while doing dishes. And, you know, I don't think my parents must have listened to it closely at all, because it's like the whole thing is like rockabilly 80s sex and violence, you know? They're talking about fishnet stockings and there's a rumble in Brighton tonight and there's not a goddamn thing that the cops can do. There's a rumble in Brighton tonight. And I was like in second grade going, da, 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 da. Hey, I want to have a rumble in Brighton tonight. No concern about that. No concern about that at all. Fast forward a couple of years later and it was hide your Guns N' Roses.
This just becomes a parody and satanic panic conversation again. But it's like, yeah, the amount of times where you're just like, but that classic old tune you like, Mom, it wasn't about what she was once leading. She leads exercise classes for seniors, which is great. And I love that she does it. She plays music. And she was one time telling me, she's like, oh, I love that song by Leonard Cohen, Hallelujah. It's so great. And I play it for the class. I'm like, it's about screwing. Like, what are you doing? Like, it's about a lot of things. But it's like, Luna, what are you doing? Like, it's so funny.
Yeah. Yeah. Our next purchase was the 45 of Yoda by Al Yankovic. So that was also very instrumental in music growth career.
I don't know what would have been the problem with Weird Al. Might have been that to mock is a sin. Maybe that would have been
fun. Is fun a problem? Any other big picture thoughts on Anthony's story? I'm really just affected by this whole story of Anthony's. Is so amazing because to me it is so much about like how time defines us of like, I'm reading it and you know, your first album in 2004 to me is, it makes me feel the age difference. Boys to Men came out when I was a bit younger. So there's so much about this that's so timely, but then also so much about this that is the timelessness of music.
Yeah.
Of Anthony saying all these things about his journey that makes me feel, you know, my age, because he discovered it in a video game, all this. But then what made Anthony throw the Green Day disc against the wall? Black Sabbath, which was old music to Anthony at that point, which became new in his life and changed him and changed his perspective. So like, I'm fascinated by how our relationship to music is both incredibly timely and incredibly timeless. Ken, you have any emotional reaction to that?
I love her. We need part two, Anthony. We need a documentary on what he threw against the wall, because that's pretty punk. I wouldn't say it's heavy. I'd say it's pretty punk. It's also metal, but it's pretty punk. Yeah, no, I mean, the week they record this, I don't watch. I've never been a Grammy watcher or an award show watcher, other than I'll tune into the Oscars and Golden Globes. Back in the day, used to be fun because everyone was drunk, but it's weird for music. Music is just so something that I don't think you can rank and put in a competition. I even take a joke at the Scorpions. If you love Scorpions, love the Scorpions. I ain't going to stop you. So I just love that every generation gets to rediscover this. That's the thing of the Beatles. Yes, they're the Beatles. They're up there with Air and Food. And yes, of course, you're like, but there's a 12-year-old right now going, what is this? What is this? And what does it mean? And to see this week of the Grammys where you have Joni Mitchell at 80. You have Billy Joel coming back with what I think is a really great classic Billy Joel song nowadays. And he had walked away and the song's about, was it wrong for me to walk away? Can I recapture? Can we? It's you know, also written to the view of a love song. I love seeing that. And I love seeing, with Luke Combs, it reintroduced Fast Car from Tracy Chapman to a new generation, mm-hmm. and they bring her on, and that performance, Tracy Chapman just nails it. Music is about that generational exchange, that thing we love in Star Wars. It's very much about that, and that's why I have come around. There's always going to be artists that come on that you don't understand, and you say, "Who's that?" And you can kind of tell back in the day if you're getting older, because who's Carson Daly and who's that band?
No.
I get it. I always push past it. Push past it to find out you don't need to love Billie Eilish, but I think you should understand and respect what people do and who she's speaking about. That's the power of music. And it was on display. Taylor Swift standing up and just standing and watching as Tracy Chapman and Luke Combs play the song I love that sight. That's what music's about. That's what music's about.
Yeah. Jennifer, you have any thoughts about the strange relationship we have with time and music?
When I read Anthony's story, it reminds me about the ritual aspect of music, which I really miss about, like, we're all saying going to the store. Maybe we already have what we want in mind, or you discover something new when you're there in the section, right? Or you're like, oh, this is an old Grateful Dead album that was live, blah, blah, blah. And it really, for me, it was all about the CDs, the artwork. You would go home and take your new music. You put on the CD and sit there and listen to it. It was a ritual. You'd look at the album artwork, the notes, right? Pull it out, see what was going on. And that was your experience. And now my kid wants, you know, the Taylor Swift album. I just download an Apple Music and there it is right instantly. I really, really miss that ritual aspect of it. And I know that people are now getting back into vinyl and things like that, but there was just something special to be an old geezer about going down to the music store. And, you know, spending your hard-earned money or your parents' money on this new piece of music, right? That would basically be the soundtrack for your life. Mm-hmm. That we all have these things, right? Oh my gosh, it just makes me very wistful.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm lucky to live within, lucky and cursed to live within walking distance of Amoeba, which records is just a temple to physical media. And there was a day a couple of weeks ago where we Sarah and I went for a walk and needed to do something real practical, and I was just kind of bummed out. And she was like, let's go to Amoeba too. It's like a healing, a balm, you know, because you look for a specific thing, but you go around and you discover, and it's what Anthony's describing in his story. That's one of the things that hit me in the story, that you spent an hour in Best Buy, that it took you an hour, that the idea of somebody shopping at Best Buy for an hour.
Easily. Yeah. You can get lost. And what mood are you in? Are you in an angry mood? Do you want to, you know, fight authority? Okay. Well, you're going to go to a certain section, right? What about you maybe now feeling in love and you want to put on music for your first date where you're driving them in the car, right? It's all these things that you think about when you go to the music store that now, well, I don't know what. I guess I'll discover it.
Yeah.
With my kids.
Yeah. This could be another hour, and I think it's you know, without a doubt, things change. And I don't agree with Spotify, but I also have a Spotify account, right? And I think it's the algorithm works for me there. I've discovered so many new artists there. So I could fight it and I could live with it. There's a lot of wonderful conversations and important conversations to have, but Joseph, one that comes back to you Jen, you're not just wistful. We're not just Gen X going, in my day, we bought CDs. There was a connection and that word you use a lot, Joseph, when talking about this stuff, the humanity that I love new tech, and I love how new bands or even old bands can get rediscovered on TikTok performance, and that's very valuable, but the connection to the artist is gone. The album being what it used to be. There's a doc out there about the company. What's the name of the company that was did all the famous album covers, especially in the 70s? And there's a great clip.
Oh yeah,
Squaring the Circle. I think
Squaring the Circle.
Doc. Yeah,
so good, so good. But there's a great moment with Noel Gallagher just saying, "Yeah, I have to go to the album photo shoot," and his daughter's like, "What's that?" And his daughter's not like teen; she's older than that. Like, "What's that?" He's like, "You know, the little picture on that costs a lot of money to make that you just skip over," and all that means is there's a little bit of a disconnect from the art. That's one of the things I worry about. I'm here for the new, but man, that's not something to leave behind, and maybe unfortunately it will.
Yeah, no, I mean, and finding a balance between the old and the new is a powerful thing in music. There are new artists I like who've affected me, who've helped me understand, you know, what younger generations are going through. Like, you know, why does Billie Eilish speak to people? You know, that's fascinating for me, because the question especially like in the late 80s when everything seemed to be getting more extreme with music, of heavy metal was getting as loud and fast and violent as possible, and hip hop was getting as like, let's get as stripped down to words and rhythm as possible. Everything was kind of like going to extremes. And there's, I remember talking about friends of like, how is, you know, if you track rock with how loud, how fast, how angry, where could we possibly go next? Billie Eilish whispering, you know, like it's an easy joke to make, but it's also like, what does that mean? Why did that happen? How does it speak to people? There's so much to discover in being open to new music. And then it's just my final thought is it's, I love what Anthony's talking about. He went through this journey of music of his era of Green Day that was then pushed out of the way by music from the past, because he found something new in it, you know, and the fact of the value in that we can revisit music again and again. I listen to that Stray Cats vinyl now that I've had since I was in second grade, and I listen to Rumble in Brighton and go like, oh, that makes me think of the movie Quadrophenia, which makes me think of the punks in Book of Boba Fett. And like, it's all these rhythms, all these connections that are sitting there on that thing that I've had since I was in second grade is pretty powerful. Final thing I'll say is, you know, I've talked a lot about Frank Sinatra and finding that music and, you know, well past its prime and it meaning a lot to me. One of my favorite Frank Sinatra songs, Dancing in the Dark, has a lyric, what though love is old, what though song is old, through them we can be young, which is just a powerful sentiment about the power of music. You never know when and how it's going to find you.
Yeah, indeed.
Great story. Great question. Thank you very much, Anthony. That's our Questions of Everything episode for this week. Ken, where can people find us?
Hey, you can find us on Twitter and Threads at Force Center Pod. Our Facebook page is Force Center Podcast. We're on Instagram, YouTube as well. Subscribe over there if you haven't already and would like to. Helps out the show, helps us. Podcast available in a lot of spots. Just search. You'll find us. You know, when you're listening to music, also just search for the podcast while you're there. Merch available at tpublic.com/user/ForceCenter. You can support us directly at patreon.com/ForceCenter. Again, 007 Center coming exclusive to Patreon supporters or available for purchase on Patreon. So check it out over there. You can follow me at Ken Napsok. Go to my website, kennapsok.com. If you like music, I say it, Jen, in my intro every week. I like making playlists that are made up of the songs that make up the soundtrack of our lives. I say it in a smoother way than that. But my show, Pop Rockin' Radio, on Mixcloud, mixcloud.com/poprockinradio, no G on rockin'. I have a live radio show every week that go through music because it's something that we're all passionate about there. So, Jen, where can they find you and your albums?
Yeah, I wish you can connect with me, because that's the wonderful thing about social media. On YouTube, Instagram at Jennifer Landa, or TikTok at Jennifer Landa 1138.
Love it, Joseph. Great use of the Sinatra lyric. Take us home. Where can they find you?
Thank you very much, Ken. You can find me on all the social media at Joseph Scrimshaw. If you want to check out my weekly newsletter blog that is called Finish Your Monsters, just Google Joseph Scrimshaw, Finish Your Monsters, and hopefully it will pop right up. But for now, that is it. We have answered the questions of everything.
Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
So, Robert, tell the people, what's a pretendian?
It's just what it sounds like, Angel. A pretend Indian.
Someone who fakes being one of us?
Someone who impersonates a native.
We're talking about real scammers and con artists.
There are pretendians teaching at universities, pretendians running governments, pretendians in Hollywood.
On our new podcast, Pretendians, we'll tell you the incredible story of these jaw-dropping frauds.
Who are they? Why do they do it? And how the heck do they keep getting away with it?
Listen to Pretendians on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.